Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org.
Hello. My name is Carrie Peterson. For those of you who don't know, I know many of you. And it's been wonderful to practice with you this morning, actually. Getting a whole half day, which feels luxurious. And it's just different enough from what I'm used to that I don't know what's coming next. So that actually is quite fresh for my mind. It's enjoyable. So anyway, thank you for your practice, and I appreciate that Koshin invited me. He let me know that your theme for this month is refuge. So I thought I'd just offer a few reflections on refuge, and then I'd love to hear from you too about what your experience or practice with this kind of heart, in some ways feels like the heart of the path, what it's been like for you. So I think of refuge as first as sort of a resolution, right, or a commitment. So we take refuge often at the beginning of a practice period, traditionally, regularly in places of practice, the beginning of a retreat, sometimes on full moon days. Did anyone see the full moon last night? Stunning. So regular reminders in which we have a chance to kind of recommit to what's most valuable, but also recollect or refresh, what does this actually mean? So some of us may have more difficulty with that initial commitment part. Often people wind up in Vipassana or insight meditation when they're a little bit squeamish about the ritual and the commitment part. And often for people who take refuge regularly as just a matter of course, getting up in the morning, it's helpful to think more about the recollection part, like to reflect, what does this actually mean? What do these qualities actually provide? What actually is trustworthy? What is worth putting at the center? And how can I continually do that? So taking refuge is really a matter of reflecting on what's most valuable, right? So not only are Buddha, Dharma, Sangha places of protection or safety, but they're also jewels, right? They're beautiful, they're radiant, they're strong, they're kind of untarnishable, right? They radiate out. So kind of resolution, but also recollection. I just find it interesting, I come from a tradition where mindfulness is very important, and mindfulness is now this quality that's supposed to save us from everything, right? It's on the front of every magazine. It's supposed to be the answer to all of our qualms. And of course it is very important, but its root, it's actually sati, the Pali word, means there's remembering in it. So it's certainly this awareness of the present moment's experience, but it's also this capacity to recollect and remember what is most valuable, most important. So the beautiful, I think, thing about the refuges, the movement of the refuges, is that what starts as an outer trust, slowly as we develop in practice, becomes an inner experience. So the outer reflects the inner and more becomes embodied, becomes more and more internalized, becomes more and more who we are. So as much as we need the outer reflections, what gradually awakens is that the inner capacities for wakefulness, for knowing truth, and for goodness, community. So I'll speak a little bit more about that. But there's this movement to refuge, so going for refuge. So we need to both have a direction. Where are we going? It's when my teacher says, it's not a refuge if you can't find it, right? So we need to know where it is, but we also need to move towards it. So what we chanted, Buddham Saranam Gacchami, to the Buddha, for refuge I go, is actually the translation. So to the Buddha, for refuge I go. So there's a movement, a kind of going forth. Some translations talk about Gacchami as walking. So we actually walk, we embody. And we use the ground both as like support, right? But also as a lifting off, moving towards something that's of value. And this, you know, there's a way in which when I'm invited to offer to share the Dharma, you kind of live in what you're reflecting on. So I've been offering little bits about refuge at the beginning of the year to different communities. And it's like, without fail, it ends up being really in your face, right, when you're offering it. So what I've been noticing these months is just that natural instinctual movement of humans and all beings for protection, right? For safety from danger. So in January, we had, I mentioned this to the Vipassana group already, had a wounded bald eagle land in our yard, right? Looking for a place to be that was protected. So it paced around, testing different spots in the yard. Am I safe here? Is this going to work? Finally ended up being in a little fort that my son had created in our laurel, clutching onto a little branch, which was a familiar motion, and protected in the laurel. A young deer found its way under an awning, my brother's house in Docton, curled up and just very peacefully died underneath the awning, underneath that protection, right? With all the rains, anyone else have ants coming into their house? Right? Protection. So this instinctual movement for protection that we all have. So in moving from outer and inner, we start to really look, and most of us have the privilege of not being bound by our basic survival needs. Most of us are not in, zones of war or conflict in that way. And so we're actually able to see what actually is safe for the mind. Where is the mind protected? Amazing piece about refuge is that the mind is kind of the source of danger, right? The greed, hatred, and delusion, mm-hmm. afflictions, the source of danger and the source of release. So how do we approach that? And first, I think to look very carefully at where do we habitually go to for some sense of safety and protection? Right? What does the mind move towards for safety and protection? So as we're looking at that, we might see ourselves going towards strong views and opinions. Right? Being right provides a sense of safety, security, solidity. Praise and approval. If everybody likes me, understands me, thinks well of me, I have this image I can sustain, most of these are somewhat unconscious, but that provides a sense of relative safety. So to kind of see where we naturally go, and also the limitations of that, how that's breaking apart all the time. The quest for more information, right? If I can just, so often our searches for safety start with this, I've noticed in my mind, if I can just, right? Get a little bit more information. So yesterday I was looking at my computer and I have this problem where I have like 30 tabs open at the same time, right? And as I was trying to simplify and close some of them, I found a tab that I had left open, and it was an article about when you have too many browser tabs open and how to stop it. At some point, I had actually looked that up, thought this is important, and kept that tab open. So this, like, search for more information. Like, we're drowning in information. And when it has no end, you can feel that, right? It has no end. So to really get a sense of those kind of temporary refuges that may give us like a dopamine hit of well-being, can't provide the kind of long-lasting well-being, safety, and protection of the mind that we need, that we're searching for. So in taking refuge, we can touch back into a deep longing of the heart for a kind of the deepest kind of safety, protection, and well-being. And one, you know, my mind often thinks in analogies and metaphors, and they tend to stick a lot better than some of the other kinds of information, but one simile for the refuges is that of a doctor, medicine, and a nurse. So the Buddha being the doctor, the Dhammas being the medicine that gets dispensed, taken, practiced with, and the Sangha as being kind of the nurses. So the movement is that the doctor kind of surveys the whole thing, awareness surveys the whole scene, but the medicine actually has to be taken. We have to walk it, we have to do it, we have to practice with it. And we help each other, dispense the medicine to each other, we mirror each other, we encourage each other, brighten each other. So this movement from outer to inner, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. And as we first start this like turning, right? This turning from what usually gives us some relief or support to something deeper, wonderful analogy of, it's from the Dhammapada, of a fish flopping on dry land. Right? Anyone felt that when they sit down to meditate, right? Without your usual stimulus, support, entertainment, the fish flopping on dry land. So this is where the sense of like resolution and direction has to come back over and over again. Okay, what is it that I'm doing here? What am I committed to? What is this? Okay. So taking refuge in the Buddha is not only kind of using the historical human figure as a point of reference, but it's also taking refuge or reorienting towards the awake part of our own mind, right? Awareness or the awakened mind. So not just what's arising in experience, but the capacity for it to be known, right? So even in this moment, there's knee pain, restlessness, confusion, contentment. There's that experience, but there's also the knowing of it. So more and more that becomes trustworthy, it becomes accessible, it becomes something we can rest back into. So there is awareness. Every moment there is awareness. So when one of my teacher's teachers was setting up a monastery in England in the 60s, part of the Thai forest tradition is the lineage I'm the most closely connected to. This is in London, and setting up a monastery that ended up being quite near a pub, right? A lot of commotion, a lot of noise, a lot of conflict. And when one of the Thai forest masters, Ajahn Chah, came to visit this monastery, saying, oh, how's it going? How's the monastery doing? And there was all this complaint. So is this too loud? We can't practice here. People are getting in fights. This is not a conducive place of practice. And his response was, is it really that the sounds are bothering you? Or is it that you're going out to bother the sounds? Right? Which direction is it actually going? So if we don't pick up and kind of wrestle, battle with what's going on in experience, awareness allows it all to come, stay for a while, and go. So there is awareness. So that longing of the mind that is looking for something to kind of rest back into, right? But also use as support, as firmness. So the Dhamma is the teachings, right? This path, practice, but it's also nature, the way things actually are. So has anyone noticed with all of the rain, kind of how water moves? The direction that water moves in, how it naturally moves downhill. It moves in the same grooves, season after season, year after year, until it makes channels and gullies and moves down towards the ocean. So learning from nature, our bodies are nature, our minds are nature. Our minds find habitual grooves that have worked in the past, and we retrace them over and over and over again. So in some ways, learning from the natural order of things and how to be in accord with that, in alignment with that, and how to kind of redirect and rechannel when we're in danger of a flood, right? So trusting in nature, that we're not separate from nature, the natural law of things. This is the inner aspect of refuge in the Dhamma, the Dharma. And the refuge in Sangha, so the third. Classically, it's the refuge in the lineage of practitioners, or those who've been practicing in this way, those who have achieved some degree of awakening, embodied, realized some degree of awakening, that when we reflect on them, our own minds, that brings a kind of brightness. I'm not here for myself alone. I'm not in this alone. But more and more, too, others in our communities are reflecting back to us our own awakened potentials, our own awakened qualities. Right, so often I think of taking refuge in Sangha as sort of centering, putting at the center, this goodness that's at the core of our humanity. So centering on goodness. So sometimes the institutions that we're committed to have a way of fracturing, falling apart. This happens in the Buddhist world all the time, right? End up not being so trustworthy, right? But the individual people or even individual acts of goodness, that can help center the mind. I can center around that. So we may not be able to trust in one perfectly awakened being without flaw, but we can always center the mind around qualities of kindness, goodness, wisdom. And so more and more I think of, with all of these, sometimes we're really drawn to one, but the others kind of fall into the background. We're really drawn to the teachings, the path of practice, but aren't so interested in showing up in community, or very interested in showing up in community, and maybe not so interested in this moment of awareness, this bright awakened mind. But ending with this reflection on Sangha, or this recollection of what it means to take refuge in our awakened qualities that manifest in relationship. Oftentimes poems say it best, right? So there's a wonderful new translation, new rendering of the Therigatha, so the verses of the elder nuns. So they're verses of awakening, the elder nuns, and so it's coming out this month. And looking back, my own tradition, I know the best, but often it hasn't been so kind to women. Hasn't been so kind and inclusive to women. But this particular rendering of these awakening poems, there's really a sense of person to person transmitting the teachings, offering goodness person to person, and having it continue just like that, being able to take refuge in that. Wait, the poem is called Matika. So Matika is the name of the nun, but it's translated as kindness. So I know my older sister passed this way. At the top of the mountain, I spread my outer robe where perhaps she once spread hers. I set down my bowl, and there was her staff, the twin of my own. Using both staffs, I lowered myself down and leaned back against a large gray rock. I let go of the staffs, and my hands were empty. The mountain went on holding me. Then it let me go. My staff I also now leave behind, just in case you're ever passing this way. So I don't know about you, but I can feel in that just the staff as a kind of support that we lend to each other. Some support that allows us to relax, allows us to let go of those things that we've been clinging to, that small sense of self that's offered a pretty shaky sense of safety. So we offer staff to each other so we can let down onto ground and then really be able to see. So it gives us a place. So just like the eagle and the fawn looking for a place where they could kind of circle and let down. It gives us a place where we can really start to see what is suffering, how is suffering created in the mind, what exacerbates it, what allows for it to release. So when we're surrounded by refuge, we can really feel that, get a sense of that, and then offer that to one another, person by person. So I let go of the staffs, and my hands were empty. The mountain went on holding me. Then it let me go. My staff I also now leave behind, just in case you're ever passing this way. So maybe we can just sit together for a minute quietly.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.